Hello and welcome into episode 7 of Beyond the Mat. I'm Nico Cred alongside me today, just John Dodaro, as Lance is being very studious and studying for an exam that he has, as we have around 2 weeks left in the year here at West Virginia. Year's gone by relatively quick, I will say, but something that doesn't go by fast, the wrestling world. Let's get into it. We'll start off with NXT as we usually do. First match of the night was Dijak against Noam Dar. They opened up the show in what I thought was a pretty good match, John. I don't know if you were able to watch it, but Noam Dar is able to win when Oro Mensah went up on the ring, then got booted, and then Dijak got hit by a Nova Roller. I mean, I guess they're building up something here. I like it personally. What are your thoughts?
Well, the bad news is I did not see NXT because I was very studious, kind of like Lance's today. But the good news is I saw everything that happened, so I can at least comment a little bit. Dijak losing? Do you think that's the right choice in that situation? That kind of caught me off guard a little bit. What do you think about that?
I mean, is what it is. He's had a lot of great matches. I don't think he necessarily needs to win all of his matches to be pushed up the card. I still think he's a great wrestler. I think he'll be used and probably eventually drafted. I think he'll go up.
He's got to get drafted at this point, because if you're at the point where you're in NXT just losing to Noam Dar, I feel like there's nothing left for you to do personally.
Yeah, well, Noam Dar has been used pretty, pretty well so far in NXT. Obviously, he lost his Heritage Cup to Charlie Dempsey of the No Quarter Catch crew. And now he's just kind of doing whatever with the metaphor. But, I mean, if they end up putting this in the storyline, I'm not complaining, as NXT Spring Breakin' is next week and the week after that. It's a two-week event. But next up, Sol Ruka against Lola Vice. Normal match. Lola Vice won. But the big thing is, after the match, Natalya said that her and Lola Vice are going to have a match in NXT Underground. They're bringing it back.
Wasn't that... They did that for Raw once.
Yep. And Raw Underground.
It was like backstage, no ropes and all that. It was like...
It was just a fight. It was pretty much Fight Club.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the big guy in Raw Underground was... Was it Dabba Kato?
Yeah, it was Apollo. He turned into Commander Aziz, I think, like Apollo Crews.
Love Commander Aziz. Love him.
Those were the days. But I'm so done with Natalya. I'm sorry. I'm just looking at it right now. I even saw the promo that Natalya did. I'm so tired of her. I don't care that she's a legend or whatever. She's not even like as big as a legend as like Charlotte Flair or any of them. But like, I'm done with her. I'm personally done with her. I don't care to watch a Natalya match in 2024. I'm sorry. That's just me.
I mean, I don't blame you. And then Sol Ruka also demanded a rematch with Blair Davenport next week at Spring Breakin'. No DQ. Because, they have history. Davenport costed Ruka a year of her career. And now still getting at her business. So Sol Ruka wants to beat her up. Let's put it that way. Next up, the returning, non-retired Ridge Holland against Joaquin Wilde. They showed NXT Anonymous footage of Ridge Holland talking to Ava backstage, and then Joaquin Wilde comes in. Then Ridge puts him up against the wall like a high school bully puts up a nerd to the locker. So they end up having a match, and Ridge Holland wins. And for what Sean Spears is just sitting ringside. Ridge Holland wins and then just walks past him, and he's just smiling. I don't know what's going on there.
I thought he retired. I thought that he would have been gone for maybe a month. Instead, he was gone for a week. The only other funny thing I could say with this is I'm looking at a picture of the referee raising Ridge Holland's hand, and everybody in the crowd either looks asleep on their phone or like they don't care for this man.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, because looking at Bleacher Report, they graded this match D+.
Oof.
Not great. Not great at all. But, I mean, they're building stuff. Spring Break and is what it is. Next up, it was a little bit of a promo battle between the family and the No Quarter Catch crew. obviously being Tony D'Angelo, Stax Lorenzo, and I believe Luca Crucifino. Luca Crucifino. They were kind of head-to-head with Charlie Dempsey. It's Damon Kemp, and then the other guy. I forgot his name. But it's those three. And pretty much, in this promo, they kind of said that they came to agreement to take out Drew Gulak after the comments that were made by Ronda Rousey a couple weeks ago. I mean, interesting way to tie it into a storyline, but, I mean, you know, it's still a bit of a sensitive topic.
Yeah, I don't... If you're just going to keep him off TV, I would just flat out keep him off TV without saying anything. But, I mean, I don't want to take a side or anything in the whole situation. It's a sensitive topic. Hopefully they do a review or something like that, or an investigation. But, yeah, it kind of felt weird, like the way that they took him out of the storyline. But at least in terms of social media, all the comments were about him, like, not being there. But, oh well.
Yeah, and then after this segment, there was this backstage thing that was going on with Ariana Grace and Gigi Dolin a couple weeks ago. They had that match where Dolin got DQ'd because she low-blowed Grace, even though Grace low-blowed her first, but the ref didn't see it. So now Ariana Grace gets to dress up Gigi Dolin however she likes. So this happens throughout the show. They meet up in a park, and then they go to this shop. Gigi picks out this green dress. She's in like the changing room for like 20 minutes. And then she comes out and like half the dress is like cut off. And Ariana Grace is like, "What did you do?" So Gigi's like, "Oh, I like it." Leaves. And then she says, "Oh, you're paying for it." Then at the end, Ariana Grace pulls out like 10 credit cards. Like, "You guys take credit?" So thanks for that, Ariana Grace. Comedic genius.
Very funny.
But the next thing that happened in the show, it was Ilya Dragunov's open challenge earlier in the show. He went to Ava and said, "I want to have a match tonight." So it was an open challenge. Everyone kind of rushed from the locker room to get to the ring. And then Javon Evans hops over the top, or like springboards off the top rope over Ilya Dragunov and then meets him face to face. So they have a match. And it was a really good match. I really enjoyed this match. I think Javon Evans is seriously talented. He's 19 years old. The things he does in the ring are insane, and he put on a very good match with Ilya Dragunov. Obviously, Dragunov did win, but, I mean, they're building Javon Evans well, and, you know, I was on Twitter earlier today, and I saw that not everyone that was a jobber will always be a jobber, and I saw a picture of Javon Evans in AEW in a squash match. Ooh. And now look at him. Now look at him. And then there was one from, like, almost 10 years ago, Kane, had a match against Ricky Starks.
Wow. It's funny, Javon Evans he was just in an arena with a bigger audience than what he was in before. But but it's pretty impressive that his first match is against Ilya Dragunov, who is arguably one of the best NXT champions of all time. Probably, I believe he is going to the main roster during the draft. So it'll be interesting to see if he loses his title. We could get to that in a second. But I think that first off, that entrance from Evans was sick. That was absolutely sick. So the fact that he's 19, they gave him that as his first match, shows that they have a lot of praise for him.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I'm really looking forward to what he can do in his future. But next up on this match card, it was Thea Hale going up against Tatum Paxley. And before the match, Tatum Paxley had this kind of like promo where she kind of went into her backstory about how she was lonely and had no friends as a child, but made friends. I didn't really get it. She was, like, playing with dolls. It was really creepy. But match happens, and Tatum Paxley won. And then after that, it was because JC Jane was out there, obviously. So Thea Hale got distracted. Tatum Paxley won. And then after Thea Hale goes after JC Jane, Lyra Valkyria jumps into the ring. She goes after Paxley. A little bit of mayhem. A lot of referees had to break it up. I mean, it was interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting. I guess they're building up Tatum and Lyra, and it gets built into something else. And then, yeah, it was fine. Fine segment.
This is what it's getting built into. At Spring Breakin', Roxanne Perez said that she was going to have a one-on-one match, and she was kind of, you know, trash-talking Ava. So Ava comes out and says, okay, you're going to have a triple threat. Lyra Valkyria, Tatum Paxley. At Spring Breakin'.
Bro, Ava Rain, man. Like, how does this matchup make sense? What did they do to earn a match? I'm sorry. Like Lyra Valkyria lost.
Well, I mean,
Tatum Paxley did nothing.
I guess she would get a rematch, and Tatum Paxley is beefing with Lyra, so it kind of makes sense, but it kind of doesn't.
Yeah, it's like, what did you do to earn the match? Similar to that tag team match, that tag team championship match when, who was it, Axiom and Frazier. They lost against Breaker and Corbin, and then the following week they just got a rematch.
And won.
So it's like, no offense, but like, what is the booking? Ava Rain.
Well, who knows. Next up, it was Authors of Pain taking on Malik Blade and Edris Anafe. I personally love Anafe and Blade as a tag team. I think they're one of the true tag teams that are still out there, not just two single stars being put together like Frazier and Axiom. I mean, we all saw that. But AOP won, obviously. They come back down to NXT after having a WrestleMania match, a Philadelphia street fight, against Lashley and the Profits. So now AOP is just doing whatever in NXT. They're obviously dominant because Akam and Rezar are like two monsters of humans. Not much else to say about that match. Yeah.
The only thing that's curious is with the draft, they did say like some people would go down to NXT, so maybe it's a permanent move for the Final Testament staying down there. I mean, then again, Karrion Kross was buried at WrestleMania, so if you're going to bury somebody, you might as well just send him down. So, I mean, maybe it revives the Final Testament a little bit, but I don't know what can save this group at this point.
I hope they revive them, because I like the group. I think the group's cool.
Yeah, they're cool. Like, they have a cool little entrance. They have Paul Ellering as a manager. So it's like, I still think they should have won at WrestleMania. I think that loss hurt them, especially with AOP being asleep for like 10 minutes while Karrion Kross was getting destroyed
at the end of that match. I mean, a table broke when Kross laid on it, and then they had to bring out another one, and then they hit the move. And AOP's just laying there, like,
complete burial.
Just get up, bro. Just get up. Anyways, next match, Josh Briggs against Ivar, who last week Ivar challenged Obafemi and left him on the mat. No one's really ever done that, but now Ivar did. Ivar is a specimen, to say the least. I don't know how he does what he does in the ring at his size. He's like, I don't know how to, like a bear, maybe? A really agile bear.
He's really like a Keith Lee, in a sense.
Kind of like Keith Lee.
Yeah, I miss him. I miss him a lot.
I do miss Keith Lee. Yeah. Come back, please. AEW's not using you, bro. Please come back.
Essentially with Ivar, though, I feel like he's essentially in the position in WWE where he has banger matches and then loses. Yeah. And he won this week, but I feel like against Obafemi, he will probably lose again.
We'll see. But Ivar and Briggs have a match. Ivar wins. Really just building towards Femi Ivar. Not too much to say about it. Next up, it was the final match of the night. Steel Cage, Trick Williams, Carmelo Hayes. I did not watch this match as I was working the pit game last night. So I was getting food when this match happened because it was like almost 10 o'clock at night and I needed something to eat. But Trick Williams wins. And I did see after the match, the crowd was chanting like, thank you, Melo. And then he did kind of like a up yours thing. So good for Melo. He's probably going to get called up to the main roster. I mean, I would assume so. I really don't think he has anything left to do. And now Ilya Dragunov, after the match, faced off or stared down Trick Williams, so they're definitely going to build towards that. And I feel like Trick Williams could win that match with Ilya Dragunov, most likely getting drafted in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, it was weird having Trick go 2-0 against Carmelo. The fact that Melo never really got a victory in this feud, like I compared it like weeks ago to the Gargano-Ciampa feud, and they split multiple times. It wasn't like one person dominated the feud. So it was kind of interesting. The rematch in general kind of surprised me. It's the thing, rematches, they just kind of got thrown out of nowhere in NXT a bit. But I didn't get to see the match, though. Carmelo Hayes should be on the main roster. I think Trick Williams, Dragunov is the way that they are going. And for once, maybe I could see Trick Williams win, but I would not be surprised if Dragunov retained, even if he goes to the main roster.
Oh, totally, totally. But with that, we're going to move on from NXT and go to SmackDown. Love some SmackDown. Show started off with Cody Rhodes doing a promo. You know, normal Cody Rhodes promo. But, you know, I've seen online, people are already tired of Cody Rhodes' title reign. It has been, like, not even 2 weeks yet. Chill.
It's so stupid. Like, it's either trolls, or, like, Roman Reigns fans saying it. Because you look at the crowds, and they're not, like, booing him or anything. Like, in my opinion, like, the fans only turn on somebody is if, like, the live reaction changes. But even then, too, it would have to be, like, the whole crowd booing Cody Rhodes for there to be anything significant. Because even look at, like, John Cena as a top babyface. It was 50-50 the majority of the time. It'd always be, like, the younger people chanting for Cena, the older people booing him. So, like, even if that ever becomes a situation for Cody Rhodes, he's not, like, turned on in that sense. Because sometimes it's just the cool thing to cheer the heels and to boo the baby faces. That sometimes is a thing. But the crowd still loved Cody Rhodes. Even on Raw, the crowd still loved Cody Rhodes. I still love Cody Rhodes, personally.
Yeah, and, you know, talking about the whole Roman Reigns fans thing, looking at what Roman Reigns is doing right now, there is a Snapchat story from Kiki Palmer with Roman Reigns sitting in a throne, sitting on a throne in, like, a bank. So apparently, I don't know if this is entirely true, but he's apparently filming Good Fortune, a heist comedy with Keanu Reeves, Seth Rogen, and Kiki Palmer.
I believe you're right about that.
Look
I
at Roman Reigns go, man. Hollywood King Colin. Will he be at SummerSlam? I hope so, because I want to acknowledge him.
I think he'll be back. And I think, too, like back to the Cody Rhodes point, if you want to see an example of fans turning on a wrestler, look at Roman Reigns during the Big Dog days, where he was not even getting cheered. He was getting booed out of buildings. That is what turning on a wrestler looks like right there.
Oh, for sure. But, you know, Cody had his normal promo, and then, there was a match before this. Let's get to the match before the big stuff. LA Knight, Bobby Lashley, Santos Escobar. LA Knight won. Solid match. Obviously building towards something that we will reveal at the end of SmackDown. But the big thing that happened was Paul Heyman, Solo, and Jimmy Uso come out to the ring. And, you know, they kind of say how they need to restore honor and whatnot to the bloodline. So then Solo takes charge, goes over to Jimmy, says, "You're my brother, I love you." Turns his back, someone attacks Jimmy. Who is it? It's Tama Tonga from New Japan. Finally, coming to WWE, joining into the Bloodline story. And then Solo attacks Jimmy, hits him with like 3 Samoan spikes. Paul Heyman then, you know, does the call Roman Reigns thing. Solo snatches the phone, throws it on the ground, stomps it. So, you know, John, me, you, and Lance, we were talking about this. Are they doing a old school bloodline versus a new school bloodline? Are they doing Roman and the Usos against Solo, Tama Tonga, and possibly Jacob Fatu, who is also rumored to have signed with WWE?
Yeah, I think that's the most likely outcome, because I think they'll probably start to do a slow babyface turn for Roman Reigns, and he'll maybe have to like get the Usos' trust again. Slowly, but I think this could go in a lot of directions. First off, too, I think 1 week we were talking about like Tama Tonga being involved in the Bloodline storyline. We kind of questioned it, like, if he was fully related or not. He's the son of Haku, so I guess it's close enough.
It's because, remember, the whole Bloodline started with there was a blood oath, I believe, that happened. Yeah. So they're technically not related, but they say they're related. I mean,
yeah,
it's a blood oath. Yeah, sure.
It's close enough. Tama Tonga, too. It's crazy as well. He is one of the founding members of Bullet Club as well. Finn Balor, Tama Tonga, Carl Anderson?
Carl Anderson, yep. And then...
Bad Luck Fale.
Bad Luck Fale.
Yeah.
We need one more. We can get the new, the old Bullet Club in WWE. Bad Luck Fale, WWE.
He is actually, I think, related to Tama Tonga. So he technically is in the Bloodline. So, hey, we could get the OG Bullet Club people back.
There are so many wrinkles in this Bloodline story. There's too many people involved.
Yeah. But even with Solo, I think it could either go one of two ways. Either Solo wants to be the tribal chief, or it's The Rock pulling the strings behind the scenes, and he's like in control of Solo and Tama Tonga and all of them, which could lead to The Rock versus Roman Reigns in the long run. But I think the only other funny thing is the fact that Solo hasn't won a meaningful match since the John Cena victory, and he's talking about consequences. But I think it was a cool segment, him defying Roman Reigns. I think it kind of rejuvenated the Bloodline story a lot, and I'm going to SmackDown this week, and I'm very excited to see if Tama Tonga will be there as well.
I would hope that he is. I mean, I feel like they have to build on it more. But moving on, there was a quick squash match. It was Cameron Grimes in the ring, and I was like, ooh, who's going to come out and face Cameron Grimes? And, John, I believe we were doing the UCF series.
We were.
So we were watching this, and I'm pretty sure I said Bron Breakker, and then his music hits. I'm like, I could write this stuff. I really could.
Yeah, his music hit, and he got Def Rebelled. So
he did get Def Rebel.
To my knowledge, I didn't fully hear the new theme watching it, but from what I heard, he got Def Rebelled and people were mad.
Yeah, and hopefully soon we will have a special episode on ranking Def Rebel theme songs. That one's going to be fun. Spoiler alert, a lot of them suck. but Bron Breakker wins that match, you know, normal squash match, and then Bayley comes out with a promo. And says that there's one person that's deserving of a title shot. And then Tiffany Stratton comes out, and oh my God, she got un-Def-Rebelled. She got reverse Def-Rebelled. Her old music's back. It's so much better, and I'm so happy, because it's actually a good song, instead of whatever they made for Tiffany when she came up to the main roster. But I believe Naomi ended up winning that match. Yeah, she did. It was a good match. It was like they took like two commercial breaks during that match.
Oh, they did. Yeah, and thankfully I'll be seeing a good match, Bayley versus Naomi, at my SmackDown. I also think, too, with Def Rebel themes, I think they made Tiffany Stratton's theme before the one that she got called up with. And I feel like every time Def Rebel makes a theme, they always start with like either a catchphrase or saying the person's name, and then the generic theme, like, it's Tiffy time. And then, like, Naomi is like,
They Def Rebel Naomi. They did it to Bayley. Hers now starts with role model.
Oh my God. Like, she got Def Rebelled too.
So many people got Def Rebelled, but
everybody in that segment got Def Rebelled.
There's one person that happened on Raw that did not get Def Rebelled. It was great. It was great to see. Yeah, we will get to that. Next match, it was Chelsea Green and Piper Niven against Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair. I really thought Chelsea Green and Piper Niven stopped being a tag team, but I guess they're still hanging in there. Obviously, Cargill and Belair won.
Seems like they're gonna make them a tag team and like potentially go for the tag titles, which would actually be pretty decent, I think, for Jade. But yeah, Chelsea Green, Piper Niven, they're back, and yeah, they probably had nothing else for them to do, so they're back.
Yeah, I mean, it was a whatever match. Then the final match, main event, Kevin Owens, Rey Mysterio, AJ Styles, triple threat match. This one ended up with AJ Styles winning this match and facing off with LA Knight, and whoever wins that match between the two will be the number one contender to Cody Rhodes' title that will be contested at Backlash in France in, I believe, 2 weeks.
Yeah, I believe two-ish weeks. I'll get to see LA Knight versus AJ Styles. They had a great match at WrestleMania, so very underrated match, I would say, at WrestleMania. And I get to see the rematch. It'll be very good. I'm hoping AJ Styles wins. He was great in that triple threat, too. He is a legend already. Another Bullet Club member there, too.
A lot of Bullet Club in WWE.
I wanted them to, like, bring it back in, like, some way or form. Like, have Tama Tonga and, like, make AJ Styles legit again. But I don't see that happening. I hope AJ beats LA Knight, though, and fights Cody Rhodes. I think that could be a good first title defense for Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, and off topic, but I just got a notification from Shams on Twitter. Raptors Jonte Porter has received a lifetime ban from the NBA for violating league's gambling rules.
Bruh.
Lifetime ban. Wow.
They sports leagues, they care more about gambling than they do, like, violence.
Yeah, they do. But anyways, back to wrestling. One thing that happened in this match that I really liked, AJ Styles hit a Styles Clash from the top rope onto Kevin Owens and then rolled him into a pin and won. I mean, it was a great move. I wish they'd do it more. It was really, really fun to see, but that was SmackDown. And now to Raw. Oh boy, what a show Raw was. I enjoyed it. It started off, unfortunately, with Rhea Ripley opening up the show, and she went out there with a sling on her arm and said that she had to relinquish the title. It's an AC joint injury, and from what I read, it will be possibly 3 to 4 months until she's back on TV. It's really unfortunate, because obviously Rhea Ripley has been a great champion for the last over a year, just about a year.
Yeah, 380 days.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate, and it was honestly a freak injury. It was when Liv Morgan slammed her into a wall backstage in Philly last week on Raw. So, I mean, yeah, it's unfortunate. They're going to crown a new champion apparently next week or have some kind of tournament.
Yeah, it's quick, like how they're getting a new champion. I saw one thing on Twitter, like the fact that her reign ended at 380 days. I guess John Cena's, one of his world titles, ended at 380 days, so they're saying that day is cursed. But, yeah, it sucks. People were also mad, like, oh, Seth Rollins didn't have to relinquish his title. Roman never had to. My only thing I would say to that is Seth Rollins missed one pay-per-view, or a premium live event now. Rhea Ripley, if, let's say, she was missing until SummerSlam or so, that would be like 4 to 5 pay-per-views.
I mean, yeah,
because
you have Backlash, and then
you have Backlash, you have King and Queen of the Ring, you have Clash at the Castle, and Money in the Bank.
Isn't there also a Bash at Berlin, or is that after
that's
SummerSlam?
After SummerSlam? Okay. But yeah, that's 4 premium live events right there that she would have to miss.
Yeah, and I feel like in terms of Rollins' title reign, they were building it with the Bloodline story, so he didn't exactly have to defend it with Ripley. I feel like she'd have to defend it more often simply because it's more of not as much of a long-term build as what Seth Rollins was. But, I mean, it is what it is. She had to relinquish. It's very unfortunate. But next up, it was the return of Sheamus. And they brought back his old theme song, Too Many Limes. Love it. Originally, it was just his normal theme song. And then, you know, the pyro hits or whatever. And I hear, it's a shameful thing, lobster head. It's not actually lobster head. But that's what people joke about online. And I'm like, wow, they did it. They actually did it.
It was, I was scared because when I was watching it, I couldn't hear the theme at first. So I thought he got Def Rebelled. And I was like, no, you got to be kidding me. They Def Rebelled Sheamus. And then, like, I heard, like, too many limes. I'm like, oh, wait, no, they brought it back.
Yeah, I texted in our group chat. I was like, oh, my God, they did it. Sheamus' old theme's back. It's great. I'm so happy they brought it back. But the match ended up with Sheamus winning. And, you know, a lot of people online were judging Sheamus' appearance. He's definitely packed on a couple pounds. But the thing is, he had neck surgery. Damn. Give the man a break. Before it, he was like chiseled six-pack. Like, give the man some time to get back into shape, all right?
I mean, he still looked very good. The match was great. Yeah, it was another banger.
It was another banger. That's all Sheamus does. But, I mean, I'm glad he's back. I've definitely missed him. They obviously came back with Written in My Face. That theme debuted in 2009. That is 15 years ago.
You see, Def Rebel, that's what a good theme sounds like.
Yes. Do more of that. Do more of that. But next up, it was R-Truth and Miz came out after Adam Pearce and Triple H were in the ring, and they introduced new tag team titles, the World Tag Team titles. To describe them, they're gold. They're gold and they're round. That's really all I can describe to them. And then R-Truth was doing some comedy. He was like, he said to Triple H, "I see right through you, Tommaso Ciampa." So
that was great.
Great comedy. The fans didn't really like it, but whatever.
I think at first they didn't, but then once they got like the Ciampa kicker, they kind of liked it. Titles look great. Titles look fantastic compared to what they were before. And I'm going to assume on SmackDown this week they'll introduce the WWE Tag Team Championships, probably.
One would assume. But this promo ended up leading to a triple threat match between the Creed Brothers, the New Day, and DIY for the number one contendership to those titles. And man, am I happy. Because DIY, they went out there and they won this match. It was a great match, in my opinion. If the Creed Brothers won, I wouldn't have been upset. The New Day won, I wouldn't have been upset. But the fact DIY won was amazing because I'm trying to even remember what happened. I think there was a suplex off the top rope, and then there was a pin. And then Gargano and Ciampa hit Man in the Middle, pinned, I believe, Woods, and won.
Yeah. I think you were right on that.
Yeah, great match. If Ciampa and Gargano win the titles, I will be screaming like a little girl, and that is completely okay.
I don't want them to win the titles until they get Undef Rebelled, because I still hate their theme, personally. We are... Like, I hate that. I'm sorry. It's so cringe.
I will say it's grown on me.
I loved their old one. It was very basic, but it was catchy, and I knew it was them. It was exciting. And they also Def Rebelled Johnny Gargano's theme, too, and I'll never forgive them. Out of everything in the new era, technically, the theme songs are the worst part.
Don't even get me started on what they did to my boy Johnny Gargano. Kind of wrestling. Cleveland Zone. Bring back Rebel Heart. Possibly the greatest theme song I've ever heard.
One of the best.
I have a great memory of that. One time I was playing a NBA 2K All-Star team up with my friends, and it was 2-on-2, and I was my team was down by like 15 points. I'm using Drazen Petrovic, and I turn on that song. I hit 4 threes in a row. So then my friends were like, "Stop him." They started double-teaming me. I was like, "Nah, it doesn't matter."
It's so catchy. It is such a catchy song.
It was great. It was great. But moving on to more... Gargano stuff. It's now Maxine Dupri and Ivy Nile against Indy Hartwell and Candice LeRae. Obviously, Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae are married and have a child and a dog. So good for them. But this match ended with Hartwell and LeRae winning. Obviously, the last couple weeks, those two have had a bit of tension between them. But now, seems like Indy Hartwell maybe turning heel with LeRae. She kind of got up to some devious acts in the ring, pulled the leg, I believe, of Maxine Dupri, and LeRae was able to get the win.
Yeah.
I don't mind the heel turn.
Yeah, I like the little turn, a little change to what I think people were expecting, just with Candice turning on Indy. I like kind of them both turning a little bit. Just because you also need tag teams, so breaking up another one probably would hurt. So I like to change, nothing much.
Reading this Bleacher Report article, one thing that with Indy Hartwell being on television, where is Dexter Lumis?
What happened to him? Is he like okay?
Last time I heard from him, he was on a Tacoma PD. He was actually speaking, which something he doesn't normally do. Obviously, in WWE, he has spoken very few words. Two words, notably, was in NXT when Indy Hartwell and Dexter Lumis got married.
That was fun.
He said, "I do." And then Austin Theory and the whole crowd starts cheering. I loved that segment so much.
It's crazy how Austin Theory was related to all of them during that time, and now he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah, now he's A-Town Down Under. Next match, however, Andrade against Dominic Mysterio. A solid match. There wasn't really much about it. Dominic Mysterio hit a Canadian Destroyer on Andrade.
That was cool.
Yeah. In Canada, nonetheless. In Canada. So, shout out Canada. Yeah. Montreal. Great stuff up there, man.
Yeah, I think they're entering the next little phase of dissension in the Judgment Day. It seems like they always have like a time where the Judgment Day is dissenting, and then they come back together. Then it's like, okay, we gotta do it again here, and then it stops. And now I think they're doing it again right here. Dominic's been losing and being shady. Damian Priest, we'll get to in a bit, but he's starting to be more babyface in a sense. Finn Balor's losing, so it's like Rhea's gone. We're in the next phase of Judgment Day descent right here.
Yeah, so after Andrade beat Mysterio, JD McDonagh came out. You know, they started attacking Andrade, and then out comes Ricochet.
Hey.
I thought it would have been like Rey Mysterio or something, but I don't mind Ricochet. I like that they're using Ricochet more because obviously he is amazing in the ring. He's great at what he does, and his promos have gotten better, I will say. So good on him. But next up, Caden Carter, Katana Chance against Piper Niven and Chelsea Green. Piper Niven and Chelsea Green, back-to-back matches on SmackDown and Raw. Good for them. Way to get back into the swing of things. But this match ended up with Green and Niven beating Carter and Chance. This is another thing that I don't exactly like about this women's tag team division. I think Chance and Carter are a great tag team, but like, as soon as they lost the tag team titles to Damage Control, they have done absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Thing is, too, is like the crowd doesn't fully care about them. So I think that's not on their end. I think that's on creative. Triple H is fantastic, but he does struggle with some things here and there. But yeah, in terms of like their individual characters, like if you can't say much about them, then they're just not going to get far. And that's just on creative for not building them up individually, I would say.
Yeah. And next up in Raw, it was another Cody Rhodes promo.
Hey.
This is where he was talking more about the Bloodline and Seth Rollins and all that. He's talking about who really called for Tama Tonga to attack Jimmy Uso. And then he brings out Jey Uso. He thanked him for what he did at WrestleMania. And that led into a match between Jey Uso and Finn Balor. In my opinion, a good match. Jey Uso wins the match. Not too much about it.
Yeah.
But then something really cool happened after the match. Jey Uso was going to get attacked by the Judgment Day, escapes, goes up through the crowd, goes through like the catwalk of the building where all the fans are, lightly shoves a fan out of the way, goes out of the building, and who is sitting outside of the, or standing outside of the building, staring up? Sami Zayn, just chilling there outside the building.
It was, oh my goodness. Sami Zayn, I think at WrestleMania, had one of the best entrances. He followed it up with one of the best entrances I've seen. But even just going back to like the Jey Uso stuff, I think too, one last point with Cody Rhodes, I forgot to say it. A reason why he's not doing much right now is because one, there is literally a draft that is about to take place. So like, this is kind of like a dead period in terms of WWE where you can't do like a lot of established feuds yet. Until like brands are assigned, so yeah, Cody's not going to do a lot, and he doesn't have his opponent yet. But good match, Jey Uso, Finn Balor. Damian Priest was not happy when Judgment Day attacked Jey Uso, and then yeah, that one shot entrance. Oh my goodness, it was first off, Jey Uso shoved that fan out of the way. That was so funny.
Yeah,
and then Sami coming out, the crowd embracing him, walking out to the ring was cinema. Absolute
it was,
cinema.
It was an amazing shot, and with Kevin Dunn obviously being gone from WWE, they're able to now do these shots, which is very awesome. But Sami Zayn, after looking at whatever he was looking at outside the building, goes through the building, walks through a lot of the fans as you know they're cheering him on, walks through the crowd down to the ring, and ends up having his match against Chad Gable for the Intercontinental Championship and Sami Zayn retained his title. But the main thing that happened was after this match, Sami Zayn and Chad Gable, you know, shook hands, hugged, whatever. Sami Zayn goes over to his family, kisses his wife, hugs his children, and then Chad Gable hits him with a Chaos Theory. Chad Gable heel turn. It's really interesting to see, and I was reading online about how, you know, with all that's happened to Gable, he's going to, like, turn into madness, and then once eventually he wins it, he's going to win that Intercontinental Championship, look at his family. And someone said this online, he's going to look at his kid, and his kid's going to be crying because she doesn't recognize the man that, the kid sees in the ring. I mean, the stuff that people think of online, it's amazing. Like, so many people out there have such creative minds for this stuff, and it's really good, and it's great to see.
Well, I think too, even like when Gable had the ankle lock on Sami Zayn in front of his wife, that's kind of similar to like Chad Gable losing in front of his daughter. So kind of like some symbolism there. I feel like when Gable suplexed Sami Zayn, that could have been a meme, like him hugging his wife and then just being taken away like that. But great heel turn, nice little match they had. I preferred their one in the gauntlet match a little bit more. But yeah, great stuff. I think heel Gable could honestly be the best thing for him. I think it could get him like on the next level in terms of being a good superstar. I think he could honestly win the Intercontinental title pretty quickly. I don't see Sami Zayn having a long reign. So I honestly think a lot of people are saying Perk Angle online. So I think this could probably be the best thing for Chad Gable right here, and I think he can do it too.
Yeah, and you know, another thing that they showed in the show was before the match, Chad Gable was training with the Creed brothers. People online were saying they're going to make a new tag team, Gable and the Creeds, have maybe American Alpha 2.0. If they bring back the OG American Alpha theme, I'll be so happy, but chances are probably not going to happen. But another funny thing that happened as a result of this main event match, Charles Barkley commented on the Pat McAfee show, I believe, of, you know, what happened in the main event. He said, you know what? I was going to fly up there and whoop Gable's butt. That man whooped Sammy in front of his wife and parents. I didn't like that at all. You can't kick a man's blank in front of his wife and parents. I didn't like the ending. You can't kick a man's blank at his house. That's bad karma. So thank you, Charles Barkley, for your comments.
He's interested.
He is interested. He is very interested. And it's great to see. Great to see Chuck, obviously, known basketball star and golfer. Great golfer. Kind of. Overall, I thought it was a great show. I love how they turned Gable heel. And, I mean, we're just going to have to see what happens from there.
Yeah, my first prediction is he gets a new theme song that is entirely terrible. And, yeah, I'm praying. Maybe Def Rebel does actually care, though, like whenever there's a top superstar in a sense and like they have to get it right, like with Roman Reigns, so maybe they'll put some effort in the Gable, but I doubt that completely, or they'll keep his current theme, I don't know. But I am excited though for what's upcoming. I'm gonna go to SmackDown this week in person, first live show in years at this point, so I'm excited though. I think it'll be a good show coming up.
Yeah. And one more thing, I was reading online about how Julia, the newly signed woman to NXT, there's plans for her to be implemented into the main event scene of NXT, and rumors are flying around that she could have her in-ring debut in late June, early July, around that time. Obviously, she does have to, you know, go to the Performance Center, get used to more of WWE style of wrestling compared to, you know, all the stuff that she was doing out in Stardom in Japan. I mean, it's really cool to see. I like that WWE finally got a big-time free agent compared to AEW with Okada, Ospreay, Mercedes Moné.
AEW could be a whole episode with what happened down there.
Oh, yeah. The brawl-out footage.
The brawl. Oh, my God. It's CM Punk. I'm kind of on CM Punk's side, and what he did was wrong, but at least he owned up to it. He said like what he did, and it literally showed what he did. It was the exact same thing. It was a joke, an absolute joke.
Yeah, and like really, in my opinion, what happened with that footage being aired, it seriously backfired on AEW, and it just, their credibility went down. And, you know, I'm all for, you know, new types of wrestling promotions to be in there and, you know, have their own brand and style of wrestling. But, you know, when you keep referencing a guy that is not in your company anymore, in the rival company, it's just not a good look in general. And, I mean, you can do whatever you want to do. Obviously, Tony Khan, he's got the money. He can sign whoever he wants, does whatever he wants to do. But it seems like this is kind of the same thing that happened to early 2000s WCW, late 90s WCW, where it's just like the writing isn't great. You know, they're not selling many tickets to shows. It just seems like it's going downhill, and I don't think they'll be able to revive it.
Yeah, they're in a hole. They're in a big hole. At least their only saving grace right now is that their pay-per-views are good. But even then, they're behind $50 paywalls. But aside from that, it's like the only way I think you could save AEW, like, in the long run, is if you get somebody new, like, under control in terms of creative. Tony Khan, I don't think, can do it anymore. I don't trust him personally. Like CM Punk said, he's too nice in a sense. So I want them to succeed because I think they have some of the best talent in the world right now. They have some of the best wrestlers in the world, like Okada and Ospreay. Kenny Omega, when he comes back, they're some of my favorites to watch live. But they just need better writing. And it was the same thing with WWE for a while. Their writing sucked in the years like 2017, 2019. They weren't selling out stadiums. The hard camp side was completely empty in some of those shows back then in 2019 and all that. But once the writing got better, cinema was happening, they've been having sellouts the majority of the time. So it's possible to come back, but it comes down to the people at the top.
Yeah, and, you know, talking about sellouts, WWE had 18 straight weeks of sellout show, or 18 straight shows that were all sellouts. The streak ended with Montreal Raw. I mean, there was only, what, 300 tickets maybe available, and I don't even know how many tickets they sold, over 10,000, I believe.
It was still a great crowd.
It was a great crowd. I mean, the thing is, whenever they release these tickets, a lot of the times they have to keep expanding it and expanding the amount of seats. And so they keep making their sets smaller. Like, the sets that they've had the last couple weeks have been relatively small. And I really enjoy it. It's because, you know, you get more people in the building, louder environment, better environment, and you still are able to put on a good amount of production. You don't need to have 50-foot-tall LED screens to put on a good production. You can have, like, a 15-foot one with, you know, 1,000 extra people in the crowd. That, I feel like that will make the show better overall. So, you know, good on WWE for doing what they're doing. I really like what's going on. I think wrestling is in a great spot right now in terms of WWE. AEW, not so much, but I feel like they'll be able to get back onto it as they have a lot of pay-per-views coming up. They could have some people returning, MJF being one name that could return. Obviously, there is a pay-per-view in AEW that is set to take place in Long Island. I think that's going to be when MJF comes back because obviously he is a Long Island native.
I think there's a pay-per-view this Sunday, too.
Ooh, there might be.
I think it's it's not World's End. It's a Dynasty? Is that the next one?
Let's look. So
I think that's happening this week.
Upcoming. Yeah, Dynasty in 4 days.
Yeah.
In St. Louis, Missouri. Main event would be Samoa Joe against Swerve Strickland for the AEW World Championship. And then the next pay-per-view is Double or Nothing. After that, Forbidden Door, AEW New Japan, All In, All Out, Wrestle Dream, Full Gear, World's End. The one that takes place in Long Island, I believe it. I think it's Forbidden Door. It says Elmont, New York.
That's probably the closest.
Yeah. So that's on June 30th. So if MJF does end up coming back, the pop will be massive. I'd personally love to see MJF in WWE. I think it'd be great there. But if he ends up staying at AEW, is what it is. He's still a great wrestler, great on the mic.
AEW is where the best wrestle, apparently. But
allegedly.
Yeah. I'll say this, my final thought, too. I'll let you know what the crowd size is for SmackDown this week, how the crowd does overall, since a lot of people like to look at that, too.
Yeah, I will be definitely tuning into that match. But with that, we're going to wrap this episode up. We'd like to thank you all for listening to Episode 7 of Beyond the Mat.